Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., Terry Madden, the Scripps Howard News Service, joins us to talk about The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. That's coming up tomorrow. We're also here a little bit of a Christmas greeting, and we're going to play Name That Church Body. I am looking forward to this. Christmas greeting from an official of a major religious organization. You know how we play this? Tomorrow it'll be fun. We play it. It's long enough to play Stop and Start, right? We're going to play Stop and Start. There's a lot there, and we're going to ask you in the course of our listening to this greeting, name the church body. That's tomorrow on Issues, Etc. For the last 25 minutes today, Dr. Uwe Simonetto joins us, our continuing weekly series on lay vocation. Today we continue our conversation on Christians and politics. Uwe's a regular guest. He's an international journalist. He's director of the new Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and director of the Center on Religion and the Media for Concordia University in Bronxville, New York, and he joins us from Bronxville. Uwe, welcome back.
Good to be back.
The big news story, of course, is that Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger of California has refused clemency for Stanley Tukey Williams. He's the notorious founder of the Crips gang now nationwide, but started out in L.A. You're a Christian in politics. You're in Arnold Schwarzenegger's shoes. What do you do, Uwe?
Well, Todd, I personally would have reprieved him, but that is a very personal opinion, which is based on my family background. I would not claim that Schwarzenegger, by not reprieving the guy, is not a Christian. Let me just quickly explain, because it may come up again. I'm the son of a blind prosecutor who, well before the Hitler years, was sent to beheadings because he was blind and couldn't see. And he later told me what it was like, and he said, these guys thought that because I was young and blind, I didn't notice anything. But, it is the dehumanization of an execution, dehumanizing all the participants, not just the condemned, that turned me absolutely against it, and this is how he influenced me. Having said this, I'm not one of those Europeans who holler and howl and scream against America being so inhuman as to execute people. The Bible is very clear. There is no biblical statement against taking a criminal's life, quite to the contrary. I personally would have reprieved him because of my objection to dehumanizing actually the participants and others. On the other hand, if Arnold Schwarzenegger refused to reprieve him, out of love for his subjects or for his citizens, and not out of love for his career, his Schwarzenegger's career, that is, I think it is totally legitimate. It wouldn't have been my choice, that's all.
So it comes down to something we've discussed many times here, Uwe, in this series so far, and that is the basic of any Christian vocation has to do with serving the neighbor in love.
Absolutely, and only that. And there again, I mean, I can't judge Schwarzenegger. I'm not in his skin. I'm quite sure that he has considered it. He has considered the well-being of his fellow citizens. He's come to a conclusion that many other decent and honest other politicians would have come to, and I'm not going to condemn him for that. It is simply not it wouldn't have been my choice.
Another subject that has been much in the news has to do with torture.
Yes.
And there are many who are very hotly accusing the Bush administration of condoning torture. Not so much to debate that here at this point, but the general question of whether or not a Christian carrying out his vocation in the position of a lawmaker and position of a governor or a president can condone such things rightly as someone carrying out their Christian vocation.
Yeah. Well, you know, now I might come across as as the confessional Lutheran opponent of capital punishment who might advocate torture under certain circumstances is not going to win me too many friends. But let's put it this way. We are living in a totally different era where many of the givens of the past no longer apply. Take, for example, a president, or take Vice President Cheney, who seems to have been advocating torture. Take a situation where the United States has a prisoner who may very well know of plans to launch, say, a nuclear attack against an American city that might kill 1 million, 2 million people, or even 100,000, just in quotation marks. If you could extract from the prisoner details as to who carries that bomb, how to stop him, what it's all like, if that is applicable, then does not the love of your fellow man, of those you are responsible for as government, those 100,000 or 100 or million people in Washington, D.C. or Chicago or wherever, does that not supersede your, quote, love for the guy whom you might extract the information from by pulling his toenails? I think, you know, it's a horrendous topic to discuss, because obviously it defies all norms of civilization until you reach the point where you say, now wait a minute, this may well be the case, but we are responsible for hundreds of thousands of lives or millions of lives. And so in that case, I would range the torturer alongside with the soldier that Luther described in his treatise, whether soldiers too can be saved, or the executioner. Obviously, this is an act, and this torture would be something that you would be doing in your position as a citizen of the kingdom to the left. You will still have to turn to Christ for forgiveness and grace. You're not forgiven like that. It is under sin. But I would be a fool if I were to say, well, I'd rather risk the destruction of 1 million lives but save this one guy from having his toenails pulled.
So it sounds like you're making the case here that in certain, and in this case, obviously extreme circumstances, right, the lesser of two evils might be not the right way to go, but in fact the only way to go.
Yes, it's the that it might be the only way to go, and in a very unpleasant way it would be too. But I mean, we have to use reason here, by the Lutheran doctrine of the two realms. Reason is the mode by which we operate in the left-hand kingdom, and so therefore, by virtue of reason, you might have to do that. Are you there? Hello.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, because the line is very bad from this end. Yes, by virtue of reason, we may be forced to do that.
All right. We're talking with Dr. Uwe Simonetto. It's part of our ongoing series on lay vocation today, Christians and Politics. Some of the tougher questions that are being raised lately, especially in our current situation, about Christians acting within their vocation when they are also called to govern civil society. Another issue has to do, and you raised this one in, off the air with us, current questions about how certain intelligence agencies come by their information, whether or not in the realm of espionage, I think that's probably the best term here, all bets are off, and how a Christian could possibly operate in the realm of espionage, which has as its fundamental prerequisite deception.
Yes. Well, now, here's a very interesting thing. And, you know, I've been a journalist and a foreign correspondent for for nearly half a century. And obviously in my life I've encountered many a spook, Americans, Germans, French, and British, at least, you know, on the Democratic side. I don't know whether I encountered any from the other side. To begin with, most of these spooks were actually practicing Christians. They serve their country, they serve in their capacity. Most interestingly enough were Roman Catholics, quite a number of Lutherans. Yes, you have to deceive, you have to, it is again part of the tools that you have to apply in order to protect your society. Very unpleasant tools they might be, but they are still unpleasant. Now, you have an interesting case going on in Europe at the moment. I mean, Europeans are hollering and howling like mad because it seems that the CIA have maintained prison camps in European Union member countries and have flown secret flights across European airspace. Well, it couldn't have been all that secret because, to my knowledge and to what I've been reading and hearing from my friends over in Europe, the European agencies and governments were very much involved. But the media are making a mountain out of a molehill here. You know, if you want to fight people who are about to destroy thousands of Americans, or for that matter, Europeans, because, I mean, these turkeys, there doesn't seem to be much of a difference between American and European anyway. If these people are set to destroy lives, if these people are set to destroy our society, then for God's sake, let's not just advertise and say, may we please have secret flights across Germany or Liechtenstein in order to get some prisoners who might provide us with good information out of the country into Guantanamo. I mean, this is so ludicrous. There is this hypocrisy in the media that drives me absolutely, as a journalist and as a committed media man, drives me absolutely insane. It's irresponsible beyond belief. Obviously, if you're in a war, which we are, then you have to use the means applicable and the most efficient means to do so. And having secret prisons and doing espionage is part of the game.
So war here is more than simply an analogy in the subjects that we're addressing in this hour, these troublesome spots for the Christian in his vocation, especially as it applies to government. It's more than just an analogy. It really is the context in which, because warfare itself, if it is to be successful warfare, yeah, also involves deception, it involves destruction, it involves many things that, in a different context, are criminal.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, you do, for example, it would be considered a criminal act to kill a civilian or to risk the life of a civilian. Obviously, I've been at the receiving end of this as a child. Obviously, if you are in the wrong place as a civilian, you're being targeted by airplanes. You know, yes, the bomber pilots or the people who send those bomber pilots committed a sin in the sense of any form of warfare being contrary to the will of God. On the other hand, if there were strategic, I mean, I would definitely exclude the bombing of Dresden and Hiroshima and stuff like that. But if there was a strategic value, for example, in bombing an industrial city or a city, a rail center, etc., and if civilians got killed there, yes, you very much regret it. You don't target these people, clearly not. If you do, then you are indeed a criminal, and I believe that those who targeted Dresden were criminals. But if you take a, quote, normal, unquote, bombing raid or artillery attack or what have you in a declared war, then clearly you're doing this out of love for the people you are paid to protect, for the people who hire you and whose servants you are.
Close alongside the whole issue of the soldier, warfare, all that goes along with it as
right.
a Christian vocation, would be in the domestic context, law enforcement, where
well,
often those who enforce our laws, those who patrol our streets and whatnot, are in some ways, in some very important ways, akin to that situation, aren't they, Uwe?
Well, absolutely, and this is, of course, the parallel that Luther drew as well. But you know, turn this thing around. If 500-600 cops in New Orleans went AWOL during Katrina, they clearly acted contrary to the what we would say the Lutheran doctrine of vocation, and that is, they did not act primarily out of love for their fellow man, but they acted out of self-love. Although then again, we can discuss the question of who is your closest neighbor. It might have been your family. Still, if you go AWOL in a disaster like that and leave your fellow citizens stranded, then clearly your actions are contrary to the Christian doctrine of vocation.
I imagine, you know, we think in terms of Christians in government, always in terms of kind of the higher echelons there.
Yeah.
A Christian president, is it possible, to your way of thinking about Christian vocation and Christians serving in government, is it possible for a thoroughgoing Christian who would, say, be elected to serve as president of the United States to conduct his daily affairs, all the details of that office,
right,
without coming into conflicts, where he says, I don't know if I can do this as a Christian, here's something, choosing between the lesser of two evils and all of the things we've discussed so far?
No, it is impossible. I mean, you are to face the music. This is the old sin boldly thing. You are a sinner, as Luther told Melanchthon. Be a strong sinner, sin boldly, and even more boldly believe and rejoice in Christ. It is impossible for a president, a governor, a mayor, a police chief, not to sin in the sense that we understand sin, which is, of course, not being faithful to the will of God, which we can't because it is ontological, it's part of our being. And so, therefore, you have to embrace the sinfulness of your life and then turn to Christ. That's what Christ died for. You know, that is the Christian story. But it is even more sinful, and it is really despicable, if out of fear of sinning, you will refuse to assume responsibility for your fellow man, for your neighbors. If you have the talent to be a good president, or if you have the talent to be a good congressman, and if you have a sense of calling you should be a congressman, and you don't do it because you refuse to sin, then you are a weakling, and then you are actually the unfaithful servant who buries the pound that has been entrusted to him. So I mean, that is this is the strange irony of our existence as human beings, that we are actually more Christian if we are willing to sin, as long as we understand, and then, you know, refusing to do our work out of fear of sinning. So therefore, sin boldly. That is, I think, one of the most fabulous statements by Martin Luther.
There are two extremes here that the Christian will tend toward, Uwe, and that is when given a conflict between the clear dictates of God's word, as that's the boundaries of what is sin and what isn't sin,
yeah,
and the call of their vocation, they will either conclude, all bets are off. As long as I'm acting in the left-hand realm, I need not have any consideration for sinning. I just do what a president does, or I just do what a soldier does, or I just do what a spy does, or something along those lines.
Well,
that's the one extreme. Well, that's the one extreme, is to say all bets are off and no moral principles apply because I'm acting within my vocation. The other extreme is quietism.
Yes.
What is the middle way between quietism and all bets are off?
Well, the middle way is that that whatever you're doing, you know you're conscious of your calling to act out of love for your fellow man. You're conscious of your sinfulness, and therefore prayerfully go and do what you have to do. When Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was born 100 years ago in February, when Dietrich Bonhoeffer was prepared to participate in this, in the killing of Adolf Hitler, he was asked, well, aren't you committing a sin by killing a fellow human being, especially since not just Hitler would have died, but presumably others as well? And he said, yes, it is sinful, and I am committing a sin, but reason now dictates that I do this out of love for my fellow man, and I still have to come to Christ, and I still have to ask God for forgiveness and grace, but I have to do it. But if you do, if you just go on and say, well, it doesn't matter, I have power, I'm elected, I have to run the show here, and regardless of how many people die, I don't even have to consider this, that is all part of the deal, well, then, of course, it is irresponsible, and then we call it hubris. And hubris is one of the components of original sin, at least according to Paul Tillich. I think that is actually one of the few things that Tillich said that I really very much appreciate. And on the other hand, the quietist is just shameful, because the quietist does not assume his responsibility as a man, as God's cooperator in the left-hand kingdom. He is not actually functioning according to divine will, which is to work as a partner of God in this world here. And so therefore he is turning not just against his fellow man, which he is doing, but by turning against his fellow man, whom he's not prepared to serve, he is also turning against God, because God assigns him to serve his fellow man.
You can find out more about Uwe's new organization called the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation, where he is director, by going to our website tonight, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click links on the left-hand side. Scroll down and you'll find Uwe Simonetto and Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation, issuesetc.org. Uwe, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks. Good night, Todd.
Uwe is an international journalist and also director of the Center for Religion and the Media for Concordia University in Bronxville, New York, and he joined us from Bronxville. Tomorrow on the program, Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service joins us. We're going to talk about the film that came out this weekend, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and we'll also play Name That Church Body tomorrow. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.